States Constitution. It is defined incredibly narrowly. Edward Snowden has never been charged with treason. He has been charged with unauthorized disclosure of national defense information. Edward Snowden worked with journalists who won Pulitzer Prizes to expose the illegal, unconstitutional mass surveillance programs of the National Security Agency, which were targeting U.S. citizens and others. In spite of the claims that these were foreign counterintelligence programs facing outward, Snowden showed conclusively the NSA, working with the FBI, was being used to engage in the bulk collection of Americans' metadata and was abusing other surveillance programs to access Americans' communications and get information about them. One of the results of Snowden's disclosures was the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals found one of the programs he exposed.
We have 30 seconds.
To be illegal and likely unconstitutional. Someone who exposes the violations of Americans' rights is not a traitor. It is a betrayal of the oath of office to violate the Fourth and First Amendment rights of Americans.
A man who many consider a hero across the political spectrum, Dan Ellsberg, before he died, said that Edward Snowden is Dan Ellsberg. Chip Gibbons, I want to thank you so much for being with us, journalist, policy director of Defending Rights and Dissent, where he's advised multiple congressional offices on reforming the Espionage Act, currently working on a book on the history of the FBI. That does it for our show. I'm Amy Goodman. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org.
This is KBOO Portland, volunteer-powered community radio.
Hello, dear listeners. Oil for Kisses is a monthly program on KBOO 90.7 FM, Portland, that highlights the headier and weirder sides of underground metal, post-punk, DIY hardcore, and beyond. Every month features a different theme where we delve into the history of a specific genre topic or musical location, or simply churn out the best, brightest, and ugliest sounds from around the globe. Join me, DJ Krauthammer, every first Friday night, Saturday morning of the month, at midnight till 3 a.m. for Oil for Kisses to experience it for yourself. Only on KBOO 90.7 FM, Portland.
KBOO.
Support for KBOO comes from KBOO members and Grendel's Coffee Shop, located at East Burnside and 8th Avenue in Portland, featuring coffee, tea, sandwiches, and more. Information at grendelspdx.com.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, workers at two Portland New Seasons are on strike after their coworker was fired.
Immigrants' rights organizations say people should be careful of fake ICE reports.
And a mix of rain and snow is headed to the Portland metro area this weekend.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, January 31st, 2025. I'm Luna Winchester.
And I'm Kate Chase. Workers at two Portland New Season stores are on strike after management fired a longtime employee and union leader earlier this week. KBOO's John Giacopi has more on the story.
Workers at the Seven Corners New Season store in Southeast Portland have gone on strike starting today, joining their co-workers and fellow union members at the Arbor Lodge location in Northeast Portland. The Arbor Lodge location began a strike on Tuesday following the termination of longtime New Seasons employee Randy Foster. Mr. Foster, a 19-year employee, was terminated early this week on the grounds that he violated store policy and state law by working on his lunch break. Mr. Foster does not dispute this fact, but contends he was helping a disabled coworker close their register so they could catch their bus on time.
Allowing my coworker out early was something that was well practiced, not only by me but other lead cashiers on the front end.
Mr. Foster had been written up the previous month for assisting a coworker in the back of the store while on the clock. Before these two incidents, Mr. Foster maintained a spotless attendance record and had received a number of commendations and awards from New Seasons management. Workers at the Arbor Lodge store voted to strike the day Mr. Foster was terminated and began a picket line that afternoon. The Arbor Lodge store closed that evening and has remained closed since, as union members from across Portland, including members of the Portland Association of Teachers and the Teamsters, have walked the picket line and led chants demanding Randy's reinstatement.
When one of us gets fired, what do we do?
Get fired up! Get fired up!
The striking workers have pledged to end their strike if Randy Foster is reinstated, but store management has not yet responded to their demands. Randy Foster is the treasurer of the New Seasons Labor Union. Union members allege that store management has historically terminated employees because of their union affiliation and activity, using minor policy violations to justify firing members. Jasper Burns, a union member at the Grant Park location, was fired shortly after Thanksgiving for putting their hands on a customer's car when the customer drove towards the picket line. Union members speaking off the record asserted that Mr. Foster's termination was another example of this tactic. This is the New Seasons Labor Union's second strike in 3 months. Contract negotiations between the New Seasons Labor Union and New Seasons owners have dragged on for over 2 years, and the union is urging New Seasons customers to boycott all New Seasons stores until a collective bargaining agreement is reached. When asked for comment on Randy Foster's termination, New Seasons management stated that, quote, "As a matter of policy, we do not comment on individual personnel matters, but any suggestion that staffing decisions are influenced by union affiliation or advocacy is unfounded." They added that, quote, "We look forward to our next regularly scheduled collective bargaining session with NSLU and express their desire to, quote, find a resolution that reflects our values and supports our dedicated staff." For KBOO News, I'm John Giacopi in Northeast Portland.
Several recent social media posts have warned Oregonians that federal immigration officers have engaged in a number of brutal enforcement activities recently. These include raiding a public university, making appearances at local businesses, and questioning children riding public transportation. None of that actually happened. There is no doubt immigrant communities across the country have been anxious since President Trump pledged to complete the largest deportation operation in American history. His threat, coupled with the fact social media can quickly disseminate even wholly inaccurate information, has worried some undocumented immigrants even more. They may worry about being deported themselves or becoming separated from family members. Advocates for immigrants are urging the public not to jump to conclusions or share unverified information, which can cause even more fear. TriMet denied a claim made on a Facebook post that 3 middle school-aged children were questioned by ICE agents at the Clackamas Town Center light rail station. TriMet staff looked into the charge and found no evidence to support it. Under state law, TriMet does not work with ICE, and people are encouraged to immediately file a report if they experience, witness, or hear about ICE activity on TriMet property. Someone also recently posted on Reddit that vans full of ICE agents were storming Portland State University. Christina Williams, a university spokesperson, said the report was fake and that officials had seen no ICE activity on campus. That post was later removed. University President Ann Cudd later told the community that officials would not consent to immigration enforcement actions on campus and would take all legal measures available to protect students. Finally, a message circulated on Instagram and Facebook alleged that ICE officers were at the Winco Foods on Southeast 82nd Avenue near Happy Valley. A Winco employee denied the incident, and an ICE spokesperson said it was not a U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement encounter.
Oregon Project Voice is an immigrant rights program funded by the American Friends Service Committee. They say people should be careful before sharing or reposting information on social media, especially if it comes from an unknown source. The organization does have a hotline where people can submit photos or video with other information, such as location, date, and time. If received, the program can send a rapid response team. The phone number is 888-622-1510. Frank Garcia, Executive Director at Immigration Counseling Service, a nonprofit legal service provider, offered advice if someone witnesses an immigration raid in public or at work. Garcia suggested ensuring nearby phone, audio, and video is on, and said witnesses should try to get the officer's name, badge number, and agency if it is safe to do so. Oregon is home to an estimated 120,000 undocumented immigrants, making up about 2.9% of the state's population. There has apparently been at least one arrest in Salem. ICE agents showed up at a family's house and took the father, who is now imprisoned at the Tacoma Northwest Detention Center. He is receiving legal assistance.
The dry weather spell in Portland was broken last night, and now a mix of snow and rain is on the way this weekend, starting Sunday. It's not likely to stick in the metro area, though, except at some points above 500 feet of elevation. These type of snow showers are expected to stick around until Tuesday. Meteorologists say the daytime temperatures will be too high for the snow to really accumulate on the roads, so driving at low elevations shouldn't be impacted. Even so, officials recommend drivers slow down and use extra caution if there is snow or ice, especially in hilly areas. This comes after Portland set a new record for longest January stretch without rain at 18 days. In the Cascades, a foot of snow is possible through Saturday. That could make traveling the passes difficult. Officials say that drivers should consider postponing their travel through high elevations until conditions are better. On Sunday, the Willamette Valley and the Central Coast will likely see some snow for areas around an elevation of 500 feet or higher. The northern coast could see 6 inches of snow through the weekend, according to the National Weather Service.
A man armed with a gun hijacked a TriMet bus in Portland on Wednesday, but everyone walked away unharmed, in large part thanks to the bus driver, Mike Perrault. Perrault was held at gunpoint by the man, but helped to de-escalate the situation, talking him down and disarming him. Perrault told the Oregonian, quote, "I told him that while he was on my bus, he'd be safe. He could give me the gun or he could put it down, but while he was on the bus, I wouldn't let anything happen to him," end quote. He then dropped the gun out of the bus window, and the man who hijacked the bus let Perrault leave. The man holed up in the bus for hours until police used a chemical agent to smoke him out. He was then arrested without incident. He's been charged with first-degree robbery and kidnapping, among other charges.
A new study finds more than 70% of Americans are working more than one job to cover their basic living expenses. Housing, groceries, and childcare top the list, but other reasons include paying for vacations or hobbies. Terry D. has more from Indiana.
Americans working two jobs to help with living expenses and cover some extras has become the norm. The U.S. Census shows that 25% of Midwest women work in multiple jobs within office and administration work. Of men, 24% hold outside jobs in management. One study conducted by the company My Perfect Resume found that 71% of U.S. workers rely on a secondary income. Career expert Jasmine Escalera says workers struggle to depend solely on their primary job to cover their basic necessities, but juggling two jobs can remove opportunities for career advancement.
The biggest piece of data that we found is that 49% of people that were surveyed said that their secondary source of income is actually impacting their performance at their primary job. So what we're seeing here is I need this, but even though I need this, I'm not doing a good job at my primary job.
She notes this imbalance decreases the ability to achieve a lifestyle that supports a work-life balance. The lack of productivity brought on by stress and fatigue from a primary job means you're likely not putting in the extra investment needed to get higher pay, better titles, or job promotions. U.S. Census data for Indiana reveal nearly 13% of Hoosiers have more than one job. The list of companies mandating that workers return to the office full-time keeps growing. This job change could mean remote workers with established routines face disruptions, and many employees have no choice but to conform or face losing their jobs. Escalera says to make yourself the priority and focus on maintaining boundaries.
If you have gotten a taste of this and you don't want to go back, then it's really about, I may need to find another company that's going to be able to give me this flexibility. And then you're stepping into a job search where your big value and concern and thing that you're looking for is that level of flexibility.
21% of people surveyed report experiencing stress and burnout and spending less time with family and friends while juggling two jobs. Escalera suggests starting a job search to find a company that permits remote work. This is Terry D. for Indiana News Service.
President Trump's latest executive actions on aviation safety, education, and birthright citizenship spark debates. Critics say they threaten civil rights, while supporters say they support competency. With more on the story, it's Farah Siddiqui with 2025 Talks.
Welcome to 2025 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
We're making a change to no longer use that biographical assessment that the FAA has used since 2014.
Stephen Bradbury, Department of Transportation General Counsel and President Donald Trump's pick for Transportation Secretary, says the agency won't consider race or gender in staffing. Trump responded immediately to the fatal collision of a commercial jetliner and a military helicopter by blaming diversity programs before investigation into the actual cause began. The crash is the first major fatal U.S. plane crash in a decade and a half. Conservative lawmakers are pressing what they call anti-woke policies across the country. In Ohio, Senate Bill 1 would end DEI programs and ban faculty strikes at public colleges. Clara Conover with the Ohio Student Association says out-of-state groups are behind legislation she says would force the teaching of far-right positions.
These are people from the national stage coming to push their agenda on Ohio students, and our legislators are listening to these out-of-staters with this larger extremist agenda over actual students who are going to be impacted.
Meanwhile, the Trump administration is aiming to expand school choice by repurposing funds toward private school voucher programs and guiding states on how to use federal money for them. Scott DeMauro of the Ohio Education Association says it's not a good idea to prioritize programs that lack oversight and have been proven not to improve student outcomes.
Public dollars belong in public schools where 90% of students attend. Every student deserves fully funded public schools that give them a sense of belonging and prepare them with the life skills they need to follow their dreams and reach their full potential.
Federal immigration agents were denied entry into some Chicago public schools. The White House changed policy to send ICE into schools, but city policy bans that, setting up a potential dispute. The ICE agents were not allowed to speak to students or staff members. In a possible last-minute policy shift, the White House says Trump is deciding if Canadian and Mexican oil imports will be included in the 25% tariff set to take effect Saturday. Two of Trump's more controversial nominees faced tough Senate hearings. Health pick Robert F. Kennedy Jr. faced questions on his views of vaccines, and Tulsi Gabbard, picked for Director of National Intelligence, faced scrutiny on Russian aggression and her opinion of leaker Edward Snowden. I'm Farah Siddiqui with Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Counterspin, your look behind the headlines with fairness and accuracy in reporting. At 6 o'clock, it's Rising Up with Sonali, then at 7, Hard Knock Radio. Tonight's weather will be rainy with an overnight low of 39 degrees. Tomorrow's weather will be rainy with a high of 43. Today in history, in 1949, the first television daytime soap opera, These Are My Children, is broadcast on NBC in Chicago. The quote of the day is from American author Zane Grey, born this day in 1872. He wrote, quote, "To bear up under loss, to fight the bitterness of defeat and the weakness of grief, to be victor over anger, to smile when tears are close, to resist evil men and base instincts, to hate hate and to love love, to go on when it would seem good to die, to seek ever after the glory and the dream, to look up with unquenchable faith in something ever more about to be. That is what any man can do, and so be great."
This weekend marks the first ever Missing in Nevada Day, as tribes work to push for a bill in Congress to help law enforcement solve the cases of missing and murdered Indigenous people. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The issue of missing and murdered Indigenous people continues to be of national concern among tribes. Now, tribes are hoping new measures will get bipartisan support in Congress to help tribal law enforcement solve these cases. The bills also coincide with the first ever Missing in Nevada Day this weekend. The Mountain West News Bureau's Yvette Fernandez has the details.
One bill is called Badges, Bridging Agency Data Gaps and Ensuring Safety. The other is called Invest to Protect. Both would fund tribal law enforcement to combat violence and, in particular, address the missing and murdered Indigenous people crisis. Tribal chairman of the Las Vegas Paiute tribe, Benny So, says these funds would give them access to forensic resources and enhance data sharing among tribal and non-tribal law enforcement. He says it will impact their ability to solve these crimes.
A lot of our brothers and sisters go missing to no avail with no help or no resources. And it seems like a lot of those cases get swept under the rug. And it's troubling to hear, you know, all of these cases that go unheard or unanswered.
According to the National Crime Information Center, murder is the third leading cause of death for Indigenous women and is 10 times higher than all other ethnicities. Both measures passed the U.S. Senate last year, but will have to be reintroduced with the current Congress. I'm Yvette Fernandez.
A nearly 1,000-year-old cache linked to the Dene people was found near Cook Inlet this summer. Researchers say it's the oldest such find in the Anchorage Bowl. KMBA's Alaska Desk reporter Alona Nyden has more.
Archaeologists discovered a cellar lined with birch bark in June at a known Dene site at Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson. They estimate that the cache was about 3.5 feet across and was likely used for storing food. Aaron Leggett is the president of the native village of Eklutna, located roughly 20 miles north of the discovery. He says it's another testament that the Dene people have been the stewards of the lands in south central Alaska for at least a millennia.
It's further confirmation of Dene oral tradition. It also shows that there's still a lot more work to be done on Dene archaeology, especially in Upper Cook Inlet.
J-Bear archaeologist Liz Ortiz was among those who first encountered the cache. Ortiz says that she and her colleague expected it to be a couple hundred years old. Instead, tests showed something extraordinary for South Central Alaska, a relatively densely populated region where ground conditions are less stable compared to other parts of the state.
When we got the results back that said it was 960 years plus or minus 30, we were shocked. I mean, Morgan and I were jumping up and down in a cube and tears. It was very, very exciting.
Another J-Bear archaeologist, Morgan Grover, says that discoveries like these are important to discuss.
Anchorage is a new town. You know, 1914 is when it's first established, but there are people who were here much longer than that.
Researchers collaborated with elders and knowledge holders from the Dena'ina and Atna tribes to get more context about the place. Today, half of Alaska's population lives within the Dene homelands, and like it says, careful analysis of the remaining sites in consultation with the tribes is crucial.
We know we can't stop development, but can we use these opportunities to kind of fill in the picture?
Archaeologists plan to further evaluate the soil samples in and around the cache. Together with tribal leaders, they hope to go back to the site later this year. In Anchorage, I'm Alona Nyden.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Elected officials in Oregon and nationwide are taking legal action to block President Donald Trump's executive order attempting to end birthright citizenship. This will have major implications across all levels of government. Edwin J. Vieira has more from New York.
Elected officials in New York and nationwide joined an amicus brief filed by the Public Rights Project fighting President Donald Trump's executive order ending birthright citizenship. It's being challenged on several fronts. A federal judge is blocking it. Since birthright citizenship is a 14th Amendment right, legal experts feel there's no basis for upholding the order. Michael Shimidas with the Columbia County Board of Supervisors says people born in the county not being considered residents would have grave impacts.
If you take that conclusion down the line, you could imagine someone who's born here, who then has kids here, who then has grandkids here. You could have generations of people living in the community living as non-citizens. So it's even worse than being a second-class citizen. They would be forced to live in the shadows.
Enacting this executive order could divert local and state resources from their intended purpose. Given its broad implications, it could add more red tape for the government, create barriers to healthcare for families, reduce some young people's ability to get jobs due to discrimination, and harm the long-term economy. Columbia County residents' feedback to Trump's recent executive orders has been mostly negative given their impacts. Shemitas notes it's exacerbating people's fear and uncertainty about the world, and adds residents have other concerns beyond Trump's culture war agenda.
I think what people are really seeing is they are concerned about the rise in costs and those kinds of things, and that this sort of attack on birthright citizenship is such a distraction from the real things at hand, which is how do we make sure working families have the tools and opportunities they need to take care of themselves.
Some people want the federal government to develop more affordable housing, address healthcare affordability challenges, and help develop a fiscally sustainable emergency response service. Shemitas says New York State is working to fill the gap left by Trump's policies.
I think New York also needs to step up and make sure that it's supporting rural hospitals, that we're making sure healthcare access is important. We've had some improvements around support for EMS systems, which is so critically important, but we just really need to continue to lean in.
This is Edwin J. Vieira for New York News Connection.
The National Old Growth Amendment would have prohibited commercial logging on about 25 million acres of public forests across the country. But, according to some environmentalists, it had too many loopholes to protect iconic Oregon old growth. Isabel Charlet has the details.
Earlier this month, the U.S. Forest Service announced they would not be following through with the National Old Growth Amendment, which would have protected some of Oregon's iconic old growth trees. The amendment was the result of a Biden administration order to tally old growth forests on federal lands and make a plan to protect them from climate-based threats. For Brenna Bell, Forest Climate Manager with 350 PDX, pulling the plug may have been for the best. While acknowledging the amendment offered protections, Bell says there were too many loopholes.
Old trees still would have been locked, except people might have believed that it was protected. So not having it, and so people don't have that false sense of protection, might be a good thing.
The amendment would have prohibited commercial logging on about 25 million acres of old growth forests. Bell adds since the amendment would have most likely been repealed under the Trump administration, withdrawing now allows for the possibility of stronger legislation down the road. Bell says contrary to what many people may believe, old growth forests in the Northwest continue to be logged. She explains federal timber targets drive logging on national forest land, pushing forests to meet volume quotas. While most logged trees are smaller second growth, she adds, there's always pressure to cut large trees to meet targets faster. Bell suggests eliminating timber targets to better protect old growth forests.
If we could just make it so trees could be logged A, to meet the local timber demand, or B, to have restoration purposes, but not because of some arbitrary target that is set in Washington, D.C., and then just distributed to all of the different forests.
The Trump administration will likely increase timber targets, says Bell, regardless if there is local demand. Reports show the Biden administration allowed the Bureau of Land Management to cut old growth trees at a faster rate than the previous decade. Old growth forests in Oregon's Coast Range absorb and store more carbon per acre than almost any other forest in the world. I'm Isabel Charlet, Oregon News Service.
Rising demand for electricity could mean more fossil fuels in the short term. Long term, investments in clean energy and efficiency could help. Dr. Anthony Lizowitz has more on the story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. Cloud computing, artificial intelligence, and new manufacturing plants are creating a fast-growing demand for electricity.
So we have an imperative in this country right now to grow the electric grid, to support a number of key industries.
Brian Janis co-founded Cloverleaf Infrastructure, which works with companies and utilities to tackle the challenge. He says it starts with optimizing the energy resources we already have. For example, utilities can adopt software systems that monitor the grid and route power in real time to transmission lines that are not at capacity. It's like rerouting car traffic to avoid bottlenecks. And with more battery storage, energy generated at low demand times can be stored and used when needed. But even with these improvements, energy generation will need to increase. Janis says that in the short term, to ramp up supply quickly, utilities will likely turn to fossil fuels. So to limit the climate impact of increased energy demand in the long term, it's important to plan ahead and invest in clean energy.
It's about how do you build that runway and that path towards ultimately using this increase in demand to actually move us forward in terms of decarbonization rather than backward.
Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Friday, January 31st, 2025. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Josh Salem and John Giacopi. The producer is Althea Billings, and engineer is Sam Bowman. Special thanks to Isabel Charlet, Terry D., Edwin J. Vieira, Farah Siddiqui, Antonia Gonzalez, and Dr. Anthony Lizowitz. The director of the Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Kate Chase.
And I'm Luna Winchester. All of our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for Counterspin.
Welcome to Counterspin, your weekly look behind the headlines. I'm Janine Jackson. This week on Counterspin, you may remember the testimony, former Starbucks CEO,